Okay, so thanks a lot for the opportunity to speak here. So I will try to give an introduction to it, to integrability in ADS-CFT, so just an overview of the subject, starting more or less from scratch and using some of the material that Matthias presented. And in this review, I want to review what is the asymptotic Bittansatz, which is the state of the art for computing the anomalous dimensions of single trace operators up to wrapping order, that is for operators which are long enough compared to the order of perturbation theory which we are considering. Then I will be quite generic, speaking about Bittansatz, what is asymptotic Bittansatz. Then I will move to Lucher corrections, saying what is the physics behind Lucher corrections, how to try to start incorporating wrapping interactions into integrable models. And finally, I will explain our Y system and why our Y system reproduces the asymptotic Bittansatz and the Lucher corrections, which I explained in the first two parts. And I wrote some long formulas there so that I don't have to slow down during the talk. So any questions, please interrupt. So let me start by some stuff that everyone knows. So in N equals 4, the objects which we consider, which I will be considering, are single trace gauge invariant operators, local operators. So something like a trace of a product of complex fields Z, then I can have some complex field X, then some more Z. I can have a covariant derivative acting on the Z. And this would be an example of a single trace operator I would consider. Now, from the ADS-CFT duality, let me already advance, such operators, where I have here one field up to J, Z fields.
All those fields are at the same point.
All those fields are at the same point, yeah, so this is at a specific point, and everything which I'll be talking about concerns the computation of the anomalous dimensions of single trace operators. So we are speaking about the spectrum, the planar spectrum of N equals 4 or ADS-CFT, because they are related.
The spectrum of the dilatation operator,
so the anomalous dimensions, right? Okay, so we have these single trace operators, and in light cone gauge, string theory in ADS5 cross S5, these operators, I should think of them as some string whose size is J, and these fields which I put in this background of Zs, I can think of them as particles moving in a vacuum. So the picture we have in mind is this X. I will think of them as some sort of particles, also called magnons, and these Z fields, I will think of them as some sort of vacuum. And this is the picture here. These excitations are mapped to these points. This would be the analog of the X field. This would be the analog of the derivative. And there are many fields and there are many strings polarizations that I can excite. So when I consider long single trace operators, the picture I have in mind in light cone gauge string theory is some long string with some excitations which propagate in the world sheet.
Is it important that most of them are Zs?
Sorry?
Is it important that most of the fields in that...
For the first part, yes. Let me consider a large operator with lots of Zs, and then the other fields are like excitations on a vacuum. So I want this picture that the fields have space to move in this vacuum of Zs.
Do you allow Z-bars also?
No, Z-bars I will not allow. And maybe I'll come to that point in a moment. But let me not consider Z-bars. Now, as you said, the objects here, which we are considering, is the dilatation operator. We have an operator which mixes all these single-trace operators, whose eigenvectors are the operators with a precise anomalous dimension, and whose eigenvalues are the anomalous dimensions. And I can think as this operator here. This was the idea of Minahan and Zarembo. I can think of them as some spin chain. I just say that the Zs are spin down and all the other fields are some other kind of spin. And then this dilatation operator can be thought as a spin chain Hamiltonian. And of course, because of perturbation theory, since I am in the planar limit, this is something I should have stressed, I'm in the planar limit, of course I can only make diagrams which interact the nearest neighbors at one loop. At two loops I can have some interaction. So I start with nearest neighbors, then I have next to nearest neighbors. So I have something like this. This term I can already interact 3, and it goes on. As I increase the order of perturbation theory, the range becomes higher and higher, and this is why I will need a large space for the fields to move, as I will soon explain. So what is remarkable, so there's nothing special about saying that it's a spin chain Hamiltonian, this is just a question of notation, I just say that this is a spin chain, of course then it's a spin chain Hamiltonian. What's remarkable is that these Hamiltonians are integrable, and by integrable it means that we can compute their spectrum exactly. And this is highly non-trivial, that the Hamiltonians that came out turn out to be integrable. And this was understood originally by Minahan Zaremo and then generalized for the full group by Beisert and Beisert-Stodacker. So okay, so we have this Hamiltonian which is integrable, and this means that we can solve it by means of Bittan-Zatz, by the usual means of integrability. So more physically, let's try to understand what integrability means here. And the picture we have in mind is the following. We consider the base, now we go to Fourier, so that I think of this magnet and I give it some momenta P1, and this derivative I give it some momenta P2, right? So I have these excitations with momenta P1 and momenta P2. And they will scatter now in the spin chain. If I hit them with the Hamiltonian, they just hop. When they are close, they scatter. Now, in 1 plus 1 dimension, of course, if I start with a state with momenta P1 and P2, and if I scatter it, of course, this goes to a state with two momenta, P1 prime and P2 prime. But of course, since energy and momenta is conserved, in two dimensions, the momenta is just exchanged. And this, of course, is implied because we have the momenta, which I call Q1, which is sum of Pj, and I have Q2, which is sum of Pj squared. Now, if I consider now a collision between three particles, say P1, P2, and P3, in three dimensions, here in our picture I could prepare three magnets, make some linear combinations, and just see what comes out. A priori, they go to some final state, P1 prime, P2 prime, and P3 prime, and a priori this set is not equal to the original set of momenta. The momenta are not simply permuted. Now, they would be just permuted if there exists an extra charge, Q3, for example, which would be something like sum of Pj cubed. If there exists some extra charge, which a priori is not obvious, then, indeed, by conservation of these three charges, the momenta will be just permuted. Therefore, if I scatter them at minus infinity and receive them at plus infinity, I would say the scattering in the bulk is as if it was just pairwise scattering.
There is a logical gap here. How one follows from another?
If I input conservation of this sum here up to 3, this sum of...
The charges are just permuted, I understand. Why it implies that the scattering is factorized?
No, I will explain in a minute, but for now I'm just saying, I didn't say yet, I say that I would deduce, because I would receive here the same moment, I would say it's like if in the bulk the scattering is pairwise, otherwise why would they be just exchanged, right?
Why does it imply that scattering is just pairwise?
Okay, as I told, so I receive three momenta, which are exactly the three which I sent. My only rational explanation is to say, in the bulk, the interactions were pairwise, because if they were not pairwise, why would the momenta be just exchanged? But let me explain in a more rigorous way. You can, when there
is... There is a more rigorous...
Which I will now explain. Suppose...
It's generated by pairwise exchanges.
I know.
So,
but it's still not, it doesn't logically follow the 3-point integral.
So let me prepare three wave packets. Let me prepare, please. Three wave packets, which I prepare in such a way that they are more or less localized and will scatter at the same point. Now, of course, if a theory has some conserved charges, it means that I can apply a transformation generated by these charges to this amplitude, and the result, the probability for this to happen, is of course the same. If I apply it momenta and energy, it just means that I can repeat my process to the right or in the future. But if I apply it Q3, and this Q3, and if I prepare three-wave packets and see what is the effect, I see that as with the energy and with the momenta, it also corresponds to a shift of the lines. But it corresponds to a shift which depends on the momenta of the particles. So I deduce that this amplitude factorizes indeed.
To really do that, you need the whole infinite
class. No, I need three. If I apply these three, I can see that the wave packet, when I apply this P3, it shifts by an amount which depends on the momenta. So,
the original argument.
This argument it was by Schenker and Witten, which is at least where I saw it. Okay. So where I learned it is there.
This argument was really based on the fact that if you start having these non-local currents and momentum Q, the only, and all of them are conserved asymptotically.
Yes.
And you have any product yeah. Really
well. This shifting of the momentum you can see just by going to Fourier, yeah, just saying what's the stationary phase and just understanding that it shifts.
Any state, the shift is dependent on.
So it depends
really
on.
Really, the local shift you need all of the. And anyway, you get them for free once you have one. Once you have this,
why not?
In fact, you're ending up with all of them that have been conserved, and any sum of Pj to any power k will be conserved. So once you get this
Q3,
you get a whole.
Yeah, yeah. But the argument I can. Physically, I can understand it in this way, that but it's enough to shift, the Q3 is enough to shift all particles apart.
You really have all the sums of C and K.
The individual moment are conserved. The moment are just exchanged. Of course, the sum, the energy, and the sum.
K is conserved.
I mean, for three particles, once I have this, of course, QK is conserved. You say for any number of particles, once I have Q1 up to Q3, QK is conserved.
Yeah, one of those.
This is the, I think this is true, yeah.
Once you have Q3.
Yeah, because Q3 does this physically. So it's intuitive that if Q3 shifts by an amount which depends on the momenta, even if you have four particles scattering, you can still separate them only with Q3. Therefore, it implies that the momenta, all of them are just permuted, and therefore QK is conserved.
Well, so, it's subtle because there are these quasi-integrable models which...
Yes, okay. But okay, I'm just trying to give the general picture. I'll soon come to more details. But so the existence of these IR charges implies, on the one hand, factorizability, that the scattering factorizes, and it also implies that the order on which the scattering occurs is irrelevant. So this has... Here, each crossing is like a 2x2 S matrix, and in general, these S matrices here, they can be just phase shifts, just numbers, but they can also be matrices. I can have isotopic degrees of freedom. And therefore, this turns out into a triangular relation for these S matrices, what is called the Young-Baxter relation. Here is what's called Young-Baxter. And this is an important constraint on the S matrix. Once we assume integrability and try to impose Young-Baxter on the 2x2 S matrix, this highly constrains this S matrix. So, this idea, so we start here with this picture of Hamiltonian, and now we could try to think, could we forget more or less about Hamiltonian and think rather in terms of some magnons in a circle which scatter and study in steady S matrix. And this idea was put forth by Matthias, who proposed to think instead of this S matrix between excitations rather than this integrable Hamiltonians. And we gain something and we lose something, as I will explain. So, what can we do once we know the S matrix and want to study the system and want to study some system in a circle? So what I can do is say, okay, I have my excitation with momenta P1 up to Pm, and I have my energy, the circle is big, this J is big, and my energy will be the sum of the energies of each of the magnons. And now I need to quantize the magnon, to quantize the momentum of the magnons. And the way I quantize, I say, okay, I have my many particle wave function, and I want to impose periodicity, which physically means that I pick one particle, I carry it around the ring, and when it comes to the same point, the phase should be trivial. And therefore, what I obtain is that the trivial propagation, e to the minus I times momenta, times the product, times the phase shift whenever particle J meets each of the other particles, this should be equal, this phase should be trivial. So in this way, so normally if I have three particles, I just have quantization of momenta. The momenta is 2 pi n over j. When I have this factorized scattering, is the next to simplest case, I get a phase shift for each of the momenta, and I have these equations which are called Bittan-Zatz. So these are the so-called Bittan-Zatz equations. Yeah?
When you say that the total energy is the sum of...
Mm-hmm. So I'm already assuming, indeed, that the circle is big and that I have asymptotic regions where all the particles are well separated. And in these regions, I can act with Hamiltonian and measure the energy.
So you assume no long-range interaction?
I assume that the range of the interaction is still small enough so that I still have some region in my circle. And this will precisely tell me where up to where the Zatz is valid. And this is why these beta zaps will have some limit of validity, and that's why we will need to modify it. Indeed, this it's a perturbative expansion. This is what's called the perturbative asymptotic beta zaps. So at each, so for each site, I can trust up to an order in G, because G is effectively what measures the range of the Hamiltonian. Yeah. Yeah, which will be a border J, so it will be J to the 2L. G to the 2J. Now, if there are, in general, like in ADS-CFT, so if there are internal degrees of freedom, then this S is a matrix. It's not a phase shift. It's not so simple. And what I should instead impose, I should solve the problem where minus 1, exactly the same thing, but now I should impose that my wave function, now I have here the product of S matrices, acting on my wave function should be equal to 0. So I should think of this as a problem which I have to diagonalize this big operator, act it on the wave function, and impose that the wave function is periodic. So let me say something about this S matrix here in ADS-CFT. So in ADS-CFT, so what are the indices of this S matrix? What are the symmetries of this S matrix? So the symmetry is of course not PSU 2,2/4. 2,2/4 is the symmetry of these Hamiltonians. Now the symmetry which I'm looking for is what is the symmetry which rotates these excitations among themselves but keeps the vacuum fixed. So it's a subgroup of 2,2/4. And this symmetry is PSU 2/2 squared extended. And this was understood by Nicholas, that if I try to construct an S matrix with this symmetry, this will be really very constraining, and it will allow me to fix completely the matrix part of this S matrix. So what I do is I write an ansatz for my S matrix compatible with the indices of the theory, and then I impose that it commutes with all the generators of this 2/2 symmetry. It's the subgroup which keeps Z fixed. So why is it extended? So the extension can be thought as being inherited from the gauge transformations. So they act nonlinearly. So for example, when you act with a commutator of Qs, when you act with a Q on a fermion, you often get a commutator of scalars, right? So when you act with a commutator of Qs on a field, what you typically get is a commutator of a scalar with a field on which you act. So it means that on acting on this spin chain with the symmetry, sometimes I change the size of the chain by one unit because I act on a field and I put an extra Z field. Now, it's a gauge transformation because it's a commutator. It's just a funny gauge transformation where the field which enters the gauge transformation is a field of the theory, but it still is a gauge transformation. So what happens is that the symmetry is extended whenever I act on each individual field, but then on the trace, this extension disappears. So this is what Matthias explained the other day. So you have a central extension, which can be thought as a gauge transformation. You should allow it when working on this S matrix, because you forget about the trace. You just consider scattering. But then once you want to impose the trace, you say that the sum of these extra charges should be zero, but the sum, the total sum, not each individual one. Because for each particle, you might have this symmetry, which enlarges locally the size by one unit. So even in 2,2/4, the symmetry, you should think of it as 2,2/4 times gauge transformation, mixed with gauge transformations, because whenever you make a transformation, there's still some commutators which are there. I don't know if Nicholas wants to say something about it, or, yeah?
This okay. Again, is something that probably makes sense to order 1 over J.
Okay, so this... So it's not obvious, at least to me, for example, why this symmetry is exact to higher order. So classically, you can see the symmetry. The commutator of two Qs, it's in the to preserve the Lagrangian, right? But even the S transformations, this conjugate to Q, then you should also propose some sort of symmetry which instead of adding a Z, takes out a Z. Otherwise, the algebra doesn't close. And now to higher orders, I think the only way one could argue why more complicated stuff doesn't happen is because 2/2 only admits this extension. So funnier things could not appear because.
So if it makes sense,
it should be this extension. I don't think there is any very solid argument, but there is many evidence which comes from assuming this to be true. So okay, we impose this symmetry, we fix completely the S matrix, and what comes out is then that the S matrix is given the matrix part. So we have a matrix part, yes, matrix, depends on two momenta, P and P prime. It's 2 slash 2 square, so it's a ten, there is a tensor with another matrix part. And then there is a scalar factor, and the scalar factor is of course not fixed by symmetry. And let me call it sigma BES, and BES stands for Beiser-Tiedemann-Staudacker. And this dressing factor, its form was also conjectured. So this form doesn't follow from symmetry. So what was tried, people tried to guess what could be the equivalent of crossing symmetry for this theory, what could be the equivalent of crossing equation. After having written this crossing equation, as usual in integral theory, there are many solutions, and one of them was picked by Beiser-Tiedemann-Staudacker, with some insight from perturbative computation and some guesswork, and it seems to be the correct one, which there have been checks which probe this to all orders. It doesn't probe the full function to all orders, but which probe many elements of this function to all orders. So this S matrix is...
It's a solution to the crossing.
It's a solution to the crossing. It's not a unique solution. Crossing equation is derived. Yes. So the idea, it was derived by Yannick, was to try, since here you don't have explicit Lorentz invariance, what he did was to try to understand what's the mathematical structure behind crossing, some opfians and antipodes, and this mathematical structure is also here, although this notion of Lorentz invariance is not here. And later it was understood by Gleb. And,
to be very honest, we don't have a proof that this function satisfies crossing.
Yeah, so I think that the statement...
We don't have a proof that
I think the statement...
satisfies crossing?
Yeah.
I mean, that strong coupling, it does...
So let me say...
not that finite coupling.
I think the statement is that it is... It's proven that this function, I think this is what I will say is correct. It's proven that this function satisfies crossing to all orders as an expansion at strong coupling. But this expansion is not convergent. Ah, I thought you proved. No? Only at leading order?
Oh, I don't know.
It was a paper of Beiser, Hernandez and Lopez, which, according to my understanding, had this proven, but... This statement might need to be... Okay. Anyway, there are checks of this... Yeah.
Could you say a bit more about where the crossing comes
from? So I can say that this theory, although it is not relativistic, it is of so-called square root form. It is like... So the dispersion relation of this theory is of the form epsilon square is equal to 1 plus 16 g square sine square of p over 2. P is the moment of the magnet, and epsilon is the epsilon of p. So it's not Lorentz invariant. It's not m square plus p square, but it's not non-relativistic either. It's not of the form epsilon is equal to sine square of p. So this theory, a priori, can be... there is also a mirror theory to this theory. It is just not the same theory, right? If you exchange time and space, you exchange P to I energy, energy to IP, and this formula still makes sense. So there is a notion of an Euclidean theory from which you can rotate to ADS5 times exercise gauged and to another mirror theory, which is very different to ADS5 cross S5 gauged. But both theories a priori should make sense.
But they're not identical.
But they are not identical. But this is not a problem for us.
The crossing
relates would relate the S matrix in one theory with the S matrix in the other theory. Yeah. So you would have to assume. In terms of these two theories, it's not very obvious. So how was crossing derived? So
it wasn't derived. It was also just guessed.
It was guessed, as I said. So the idea is, you write, you try to understand. You write it algebraically for the usual relativistic models, which you know. You say it is the action on some antipode, on some S matrices, which flips the legs, and you write in a completely mathematical form which obscures all physics. And then, in ADS5, you also have the mathematical formalism, but not the Lorentz invariance, so you just make a guess by comparing the structures.
It's to Lorentz invariance. It's just a notion that you have some sort of antiparticle or conjugate particle.
Yes.
And so this thing is equal to its antiparticle or whatever you call it, from that you can derive a crossing.
Is it equal to its antiparticle?
So it's like a real representation of something instead of a complex one.
And then you have an applicativity.
Yeah. Mm.
for example,
and,
in
you can derive many. I mean, you can try to derive any equation on the stressing factor, and when whatever equation you derive actually boils down to the crossing equation. There are many different things you can compute, and it's always the same. Mm-hmm. Well, putting things to be equal to one is always the same crossing equation.
That was not very clear, at least.
Well,
putting
from you get some crossing. From your paper, you get some.
Yes. Some crossing
equation.
Yeah, from imposing that particle.
If you have two particles which form a complete singlet, mm-hmm. which have no energy, it's just a vacuum bubble of two particles. You say that this is like nothing. This scatters with nothing, and this gives you the crossing equation, which is a. To me, it's a physical statement. Or you can say, okay, you take the S matrix, you just
flip two legs.
Quantities Y, which Perry will now speak about, they are invariant with respect to this crossing. You mean that they should be just singlets? The crossing we checked for, in the last paper, the claim was the following. Y should be invariant with respect to the crossing, which is essentially flipping x plus minus to 1 or x plus minus. But this means that there are singlets in your.
Okay, let me maybe if I have time I will comment on crossing on the Y system, but I'm still a bit far. So there are some variables which are useful to introduce in this ADS CFT. So in the same way that relativistic models are well parametrized by cosh of theta and sinh of theta, let me introduce some variables to parametrize the momenta, which will be useful when I will write the explicit form of the asymptotic bit equations for this model, so that you can see how they look like. So I will introduce some variables x plus and x minus, which parametrize the momenta. X plus over x minus will be exponential of the momenta. This, of course, is not enough because I have two variables, and I also have the constraint that x plus plus 1 over x plus minus x minus minus 1 over x minus is equal to I over g. This relates to the x plus and x minus, the coupling. So these two relations fix completely these variables x plus and x minus. And let me also introduce a variable u, which is given by 2u over g is x plus plus 1 over x plus x minus plus 1 over x minus. This map, x plus and 1 over x plus, is a Zhukovsky map. It seems to be quite important in this ADS CFT. It's appearing everywhere. With this map, which parameterizes the momenta, and this u is a new variable introduced. By the way, I can write the energy also in terms of these variables. Epsilon of p will be given just 2ig over x minus, minus 2ig over x plus, plus 1. And with this, in terms of these variables, this is how the dressing factor looks like. So there is a very simple part which depends on u minus u prime, and then there is these chi's which are completely anti-symmetrized, and these chi's, they can be written in this integral form. This integral form was written by Dori, Hoffman, and Maldacena. So it's a simple double integral, and then there is log of some gamma function, and g appears here. And then this x plus and x minus. So just to show that there is a completely explicit form for this dressing factor. Now I want to speak about transfer matrices. So transfer matrices are some very important objects in integrable models, maybe the most important objects in integrable models. Volodya already spoke about them, but I will repeat some of the things and introduce some new ones. So let's consider this object, which I will graphically represent like this. I will pick some ghost or some virtual particle with momenta p and scatter it with physical particles p1 up to pm. So what do I mean by this object? Let me call it t of p. It's a function of p. It's also a function of p1 up to pm, of course, but it's a function of p. And it's equal to the trace. This line here means there's a trace over the auxiliary space. And I represent as a single line. Let me think of this as the fundamental representation of 2/2. And then I have the trace of this S matrix of P and P1, etc., S matrix of P and PM. So this is an object which acts on the full quantum space, and there is a trace over this auxiliary space, which is, so each S matrix corresponds in that picture to this line. Okay? So this is quite an important object in integrable theories. And we can already see that this object is related to bit equations.
Do you mean S hat there?
Sorry, here I mean S hat, and I even mean the matrix part. Let me this be the matrix part of S.
What do you mean without the signal?
Yeah, the ultimate. This matrix, and there are two. There is, this would be a PSU2/2 left, and this one a right one. And let me consider this matrix, this part. And then, this S matrix, it turns out that this S matrix, when you pick two momenta which are equal, it's just the permutator or the graded permutator of two particles. And this has a nice physical interpretation. This transfer matrix at some physical momenta pj, so this is the graphical interpretation, is given by, I scatter with the particle, but at particle pj it's the permutator. It gains the quantum numbers of the physical particle. And then here it goes and it scatters with the other particles. But this picture is precisely the picture which I have here. I pick one particle j, I scatter it with all the others, and I should come back to a trivial phase. So in terms of these mathematical objects, these T's, which are traces of this product of S matrix, the asymptotic Vitanzhat equations, they can be written very elegantly in the form exponential of minus I j pj, pj times the product of the scalar parts, because the scalar parts I did not include, of pj with pk, times the transfer matrix left of pj times the transfer matrix right of pj is equal to minus 1. So this is just a nice way to write bit equations. So this transfer matrix is encode very naturally bit equations. Sorry? Why minus 1? Minus 1 because in these transfer matrices there the... it was 1. Okay. It's some detail that there is a product of a J not equal or J equal and the S matrix is minus 1. So to make it the product over the not equal instead of all K's you put this minus, but it's irrelevant. So what are these transfer matrices? So when we diagonalize, when we solve this problem and when we compute these T's, what are the variables which appear? On the one hand, we have the physical momenta. We have the physical momenta of the guys which go around. But then we also have the 2/2 degrees of freedom. So we also have spin waves in this 2/2. So these transfer matrices, this wave function here, if you want, will depend also on the variables which parameterize the spin waves of the 2/2. 2/2 is a group with rank 3. And so the SU2/2 left spin waves, they are described by some extra variables, so which I will call U1, comma J, where J goes from 1 to K1, then U2, comma J, and U3, comma J. These are three variables, three extra variables, which I introduced to treat the SU2 left degrees of freedom. The momenta, PJ, I associate to U4, J, recall that there is a map from each momenta to this U's, U4J, and the SU2/2 right, I have to introduce some three extra variables, which will be U5J, U6J, and U7J's. So there will be seven types of variables, and this makes sense, 7 is the rank of 2,2/4, and these seven variables will have to be quantized to describe this system, because both the motion of the momenta in the circle and the motion of the spin waves in the particles, everything is in a circle, everything needs to be quantized. So how are these variables quantized? This T hat, so now these variables here which I introduce, I will codify them, I will call them in what are called Baxter polynomials. So I define a Baxter polynomial Q, A, which is product of U minus UAJ. So Q1 codes the position of the U1 roots, Q2 of the U2 roots. I define some other polynomial, R plus minus, which is defined as product of X minus plus J. And so this polynomial also encodes the position of the U roots through this axis. And finally, and this is the last thing I will introduce, I introduce B plus minus, which is product of x minus 1 over x minus plus j. So this, there is always x plus and 1 over x plus. in terms of these variables, and each variable, each product goes up to Ka, it's the number of which I consider, in terms of these variables, this is the form of P in the fundamental representation. I don't know if it's possible to see. There are ratios of Baxter polynomials, Q3 plus over Q3 minus, where plus and minus, let me write here, it's important, F plus minus is F of U plus I over 2. And this is the form of the Baxter polynomials. I have Q plus 3 over Q3 minus, Q2 minus minus over Q2, then I have some R's. I have 4 terms, and they codify all roots. And this one, of course, is for left, and I have a similar one for right.
You should put a couple of minuses there.
Yes, indeed, but I don't know, because this times this. Okay, maybe there are 2 minuses here, but I'm not sure, actually. Okay, but that's...
You don't have a problem that R and B are not polynomials in U, no?
No, this problem I don't have, because the no, I don't have a problem with that, because, well, so let me, so I have this T, I will answer in 3 sentences. I have this T. This T is what I obtain when I diagonalize these guys here. I diagonalize this problem and I get this T in terms of these extra variables. Now, everything needs to be quantized. There is here one equation which quantizes the momenta. So here I get one equation. And now I need to quantize the spin waves. And the spin waves, you can see that this T, which must be irregular because it's by construction a regular operator, it seems to have poles here when you in Q3 and Q3. So when you cancel the poles here between this Q, you get a Beaton-Zatz equation for U3. And when you cancel these poles, you get a Beaton-Zatz equation for U2. And when you cancel these poles here, you get a Beaton-Zatz equation for U1. So the Beaton-Zatz equations which follow from regularity of T's are always in Q form, and they are not polynomials. And they are polynomials. So, okay, so I have, let me repeat again, I have transfer matrix. When I diagonalize it, I find that the U's, U3, U2s, and U1s must be quantized, and the bit equations are obtained by imposing that this object is regular. And then I have an extra equation which comes from this. So I have a total number of equations, which is 1 plus 3 for the left SU2 plus 3 for the right SU2. And I wrote them explicitly here, and this gives 7 equations, which is, of course, the rank of 2,2/4.
Well, Stefan is right, this is not a meromorphic function.
And this could, yeah, but the extra term, from the point of view of 2/2, these are just potentials.
So I think the claim is that they are on the physical sheet, really the singularities cancel. The next sheets don't cancel.
No, for the auxiliary roots. No, it's for the auxiliary roots.
Supposed to be meromorphic.
No, it's meromorphic.
What even on the torus has cuts?
The
yes, always with the dressing factor, maybe, I don't know.
I think so. I mean, that was always the problem.
I mean, you even there's no.
No, I mean these are the transfer matrices.
These are transfer matrices of 2/2.
They are just well defined.
No, they are well defined. It's like Hubbard.
No,
the problems I think which you are mentioning are the.
It was only on the physical sheet.
No, this was the 2,2/4 transfer matrices of Nicholas, right? This was the 2,2/4 attempt that you did. Those had poles which could not be cancelled. But here, no. Here it's 2/2. Here it's 2/2. It's perfect. I mean, the poles which you should cancel is the poles for the auxiliary roots. So I get 3-bit equations here plus the middle node equation, and there is the right one. So I get in total 7 equations, and I should not cancel the poles in U4. I should cancel them for the auxiliary roots. U4 are fixed, right? I can diagonalize this for any momenta. I don't need to quantize the momenta. If after that I want to quantize by imposing this equation, I can, but I can still relax completely the quantization of U4.
But in the Hubbard model also, in finite volumes, it will be cut for this object. Because there's this extra level which unwinds all the cuts.
I mean, at least for the two or three levels, the transfer matrices are completely well behaved, whatever that means. Not claiming that they're not.
All I'm saying is that there's cuts.
Maybe because of the parameterization, right? If you parameterize.
Your parameterization, but yeah. Of course, if you choose the wrong parameterization, you can always.
Oh, I claim that in ADS-CFT, there's no parameterization, no known parameterization such that there are no cuts.
But the I mean.
No, with them, I mean. That's why they don't know how to replace analyticity statements in usual relativistic field theory, where in the theta plane everything becomes meromorphic.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's not the case. I mean,
but that's a different question.
Related.
I agree. Okay, I agree. I mean, yeah. Okay, that's true. This notion of what is the analytical domain that we have in relativistic theories, that we write Mandelstam variables and see there is a strip, etc. All this is much more obscure here, where we have this parameterization instead of the usual Gaussian cinch. Of course, that's true.
You demand analyticity, and then you demand maximal analyticity in the sense of
exactly.
The number of poles. And
yeah.
Here you always have cuts, so you have to maybe define some principle of minimum number of cuts or something. But
okay.
You mean in this extra functions which he has that R, etc. Because of course, I agree that in SU2/2, all the singularities cancel except these R's, which are defined there, the square root.
So, let me maybe, I think it's a bit too technical, the square roots for most people. Maybe I should. Let me give some examples on the. Because it's a bit too messy in notation. So, as I told, we have 7 equations, so we have 7 types of variable to fix, U1 up to U7. So when I choose the number of roots of type 1, the numbers of roots of type 2, numbers of roots of type 3, etc., I'm saying which states I'm considering, what polarizations I'm exciting. Then I plug them into bit equations, into this one, plus the equations for cancellation of the poles, and I can quantize the momenta and therefore obtain the spectra of the theory. So let me just give some example. For example, so I have all these numbers, K1 up to K7, where the K1, K2, K3, K4, K5, K6, and K7, where these last 3 parameterize the SU2/2 right, the first 3 the SU2/2 left, and the middle one the momenta. And for example, for Konishi, what is Konishi? For Konishi, I can think. Sorry. For Konishi, I will have, for example, I just put 2 magnets for the middle node. And here I'm thinking of Konishi as being trace of Z with X. So I have 2 magnets X, and there is no other polarization excited. So I consider only here, for example, these 2 here. For example, if I consider a state which has trace of some Z, then some S derivatives, S covariant derivatives, and then some XM and also some J. For example, this would correspond, I hope I do no mistake, but this S plus M, S 0, 0, for example, if I consider some state plus permutations, of course. And you see that by choosing different patterns of excitations, I choose different polarizations. So let me just, for example, an isoperator which were studied by Matthias, Stefan, and Ray are these traces of F to the L, for example, and these they correspond, I will not write explicitly, but more or less everything is excited. Okay, but as I said before, and Nathan pointed out, this is asymptotic. So this is very powerful, all this thinking in terms of S matrix, in terms of Hamiltonian was very fruitful because symmetry was very constrained, then we could try to explore crossing, so we could write the exact spectrum for many coupling, but it's not exact, it's asymptotic, of course, because we need this notion of having a large ring so that we have particles to scatter and then we read the energy. So when I get the energy from these states, which I compute, the energy is, of course, given by the sum of square root of 1 plus 16 g squared sine square of p over 2 up to the number of magnets m. And then there is some corrections from wrapping. So these are corrections where the range of the Hamiltonian is so large that it starts interacting with itself. So I have here my operator, my fields, and the interaction is so large that it starts interacting with your own field. So this delta wrapping is of order g to the 2j. As you said, at weak coupling, And if I study this theory at strong coupling, that is, I have my string, I consider the analog classical configurations, and I consider what's the difference of the energy if they were in an infinite line or in a finite line, then there is an exponential separator, e to the minus j over 2g, when g is very large. So, in any case, these wrapping corrections are suppressed, and an exact formalism needs to take them into account. Needs to take into account these wrapping interactions where virtual particles go around the circle. In the world sheet picture, this is continuous, and we really have some virtual processes going around the full circle. Now, let me speak then a bit about Luscher formulas. So Luscher formulas was a technology developed by Luscher to study what happens when I put a particle in a finite, in a large circle. So what Luscher studied was, I have a particle, and imagine I know how to compute its exact mass. I could compute the self-energy, and I know the exact mass of the particle in infinite volume. And I want to understand, when I put the particle now in a circle, how does the mass of this particle, the state of this single particle state, changes when I put it in L? What's the leading correction to this mass? So of course this is related to the change in the self-energy, the new graphs which contribute to the self-energy in the pole of the propagator, when I put this particle in a finite circle. So what are these new processes which appear, which were not there in infinite volume? So now this language, what I'm speaking about, will be typically, I will speak in terms of world sheet, because I will have the notion of a two-dimensional particle and then virtual particles in the world sheet. So far I was mostly in the picture of gauge theory, and now I will move to the language of light cone gauge.
Really this is a sneaky thing to do, because you really, up to now you sort of talked about spin chains, right? Long range spin chains, and then for spin chains, if you look at this kind of cylinder, the cylinder will be also, you will have a discrete time as well.
It's completely not obvious.
It's a real jump.
It's a real conceptual jump.
In the logic somehow.
It's a huge gap in the logic. Now I move completely to string theory. I consider a string, a very small string. Say here it's a string with two excitations. It's a small string of size 2. And I think of the virtual processes in this string, and I go to the extreme regime of string theory, where it is very coupled, which corresponds to weakly coupled Young-Mills, and I try to get the corrections to the wrapping effect due to perturbative computations of Young-Mills. So of course the graphs which I'm considering here are two-dimensional world sheet loops. They have nothing to do with the graphs, the four-dimensional graphs which one computes to compute the dilatation operator. So it's of course remarkable that it works, and the first time it worked was by these computations of Yannick Banyok and Lukovsky, which checked that this technology of extending Luscher to this extreme regime of weak coupling reproduces the correct perturbative computations. So I have one particle and I put it in finite volume. So when I put it in finite volume, new graphs appear which were not there. Say I'm representing in terms of one particle irreducibles, I have this graph. I have also, there are three graphs. I have this one, and I have this one. So these three graphs are the leading order graphs which appear when I put my particle in finite volume. So it's the graphs where I have one virtual particle which goes around the world and comes back. So let's look, for example, at this one. So what's this one? Now I will set 2 equal pi equal I equal 1. I have dq naught, dq1. Okay, maybe here I can still keep them. And then, what do I have? I have this propagator which goes in one direction in the other, so I have a sum of exponential of iq1, the spatial part only, L plus minus, depending on the two directions which it might go. Then I have this propagator. Let me put an index A here and B for the virtual particle. I have a propagator of particle B with momenta Q. The virtual momenta is Q. And then I have a four-point function AB of PQ minus P minus Q. For example, I have this picture. And of course, this is given by 1 over minus q naught squared plus epsilon of q1 squared. Okay. So now what Pluscher did was to say, okay, so now let me deform the contour in Q1 so that I pick the pole of the propagator. That is, I will deform it so that I will cut the line here and this guy Q will become on shell. So I deform the contour in Q1 so that I pick the pole. Let's consider only one exponential, the one which becomes suppressed, otherwise I have to deform in the opposite direction. Then I get just an integral over Q0. I ignore kinematical factors. Then I have exponential of I Q1L, but now Q1, let me put a star because Q1 now it's really on shell. And it just picks on shell, so now I have this gamma, this object which I represent like this. I have P, Q, P, Q. And now it's on shell. It's computed on shell. If I do the same for all the other diagrams, what I obtain is I obtain these pictures. Everything is on shell. But this is nothing but the S matrix expanded in all possible channels. So it's a quite funny expression that finally I can write integral dq exponential of iql, and then, okay, this is the S matrix, so let me write it as a sum over B, S matrix AB, AB, there is a physical particle, scatters with a virtual particle, there is AB, and there is, okay, a minus one, but for supersymmetric theories this is not important because this is the forward amplitude. So this formula corrects the energy of a particle up to some factors here, which are kinematics, when I put it in a circle. And it depends only on the infinite volume S matrix and on the infinite volume dispersion relation. So it's a way to extract the first leading order corrections. This is quite powerful. This is not limited to integrable models. Here, nothing which I said is particular to two dimensions. I could still remain here some transverse integration. So it's not important that the model is integrable. It's not important that it's two-dimensional. This leading correction is really something quite general, and it always depends on the S matrix of the theory. So for many particles now, this was for one particle. And now the idea is, let's try to generalize it to many particles, because in ADS-TFT we want to consider states with many magnets. And having it generalized, let's compute wrapping interactions. So the generalization, based on this picture, will be that the correction, the wrapping, will be... Now there are two terms. One of them, when I put the particles with wrapping interactions, the quantization of the bit equations will change. But this one I don't want to talk about because it's of leading, at leading order at strong coupling. So there is a term which is corrections to asymptotic bit ansatz. And then there is the analog of this term here, which I can represent as some integral dq exponential of iql times the product of S matrices and sum over B. So this part here, I represent it precisely as a virtual particle scattering with a physical particle. But what is this? Well, this is precisely what I defined as transfer matrix. So I see that, again, the very same object which was quite useful to write the asymptotic bit equations is emerging in the wrapping interactions. So what I have for wrapping, for the leading wrapping, will be that it will be given by an integral dq and then exponential of iql. Then there will be this sigma bs of q and pj, product over J, and then transfer matrix right times transfer matrix left times transfer matrix right of Q. And now I can have many particles flowing in this direction. I can have the fundamental representations, but I can have all the bound states of the part of the states. So I put an index A in this transfer matrix, and this A parametrizes the representation which I'm summing. And then I should sum over A. And these objects, these transfer matrices, which I defined here in terms of the fundamental, they are equally defined objects in higher representations when what flows here is some semi-rep lambda. So I have this nice writing of wrapping in terms of the sum over representations of virtual particles in a given representation flowing in the cylinder, going around the cylinder.
What's this integral over Q?
So this A, I'm summing here over antisymmetric over these antisymmetric representations.
How do you determine the spectrum of bound states?
The spectrum of bound states, I should find it from looking at the poles of the S matrix and analyzing the...
So it's that analysis.
Basically, those poles, they come from these poles here, U minus U prime equal I. So by analyzing, so they can form strings of states with U minus U prime separated by I. Now...
I was asking about the integral over Q. So
this integral...
Is it some cycle you do over the kinematical space?
So let me write you... So this, I think, if there is no question, I will write this in terms of the variables of ADS-CFT. So in terms of the variables of ADS-CFT, I have an integral du over 2 pi I. Then I have x minus a over x plus a to the L. Recall that x minus over x plus was the momenta I had parametrized. Now I also define the notation x a is x of u plus I a over 2. So this is the fused momenta for bound states. And this expression is multiplied by derivative with respect to u. This is just kinematical of the energy of bound state a of u. And this integral goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. And the x plus are evaluated in Michler kinematics, so x minus is smaller than 1. But maybe about these details I can discuss at the end. Okay, otherwise, unless you have some particular question. Is this clear?
I'm wondering if that's, I mean, the space of u or the space of q is some torus.
Here I just have an integral over the real axis of u.
It's just from minus infinity.
Just from minus infinity to plus infinity. Just an integral over the real axis.
You have one, like, three t's, the last t you wanted to erase.
Right? And good. Okay, so now, as I said, so I can have a fundamental particle going around this circle, or I can have, and I can also have, some more complicated bound state, like this one. But this one, I can think of it as this one fused. After all, this one is the fundamental one. And indeed, there are relations which relate the transfer matrices in higher representations with the transfer matrices in more basic representations, as there should be. For example, for characters, the trace of a group element, we know that the character for the symmetric representation plus the character for the anti-symmetric representation is equal to the character of the fundamental square, for example. And these sort of relations, which relate characters in several representations, they can be generalized, and they are also valid for the transfer matrices. And the transfer matrices in several representations are also related by some relation like this. So more precisely, so if I consider the representation where I have A boxes and S boxes here, the relation which I have is TAS plus times TAS minus, plus and minus means shift by I over 2, is equal to TAS plus 1, TAS minus 1, plus, and now shift in the other variable, A plus 1 S, TA minus 1 S. So this is what is the Hirota equation that Volode spoke about. So physically it is encoding the fusion of the bound states. So physically it's related to fusion of fundamental particles into higher representations. And if you replace this T by character, of course then there is no spectral parameter U. You get character square is equal to character time character. This is the usual Weyl formula for characters, or a version of Weyl formula. It's the Hirota equation. Okay, so we have this rewriting of wrapping in terms of these T's. Now, where do these T's, this index A and S live? So A needs to be positive, of course, S needs to be positive. If it was a usual Lie algebra, these indexes, they will live in a strip because you cannot anti-symmetrize, if S is 3, you cannot anti-symmetrize more than 3 boxes. But in supergroups, as explained, for example, by Volodian and Anton and... I forgot the other name.
Sorin.
These representations, these indexes A and S, should be thought as living in a fat hook. So the possible representation for supergroups, they are not bounded from either direction, provided you are close to this axis here. As in Lie algebras, there are some points which are non-trivial, some representations which are non-trivial, like these points which are marked by these balls. These, the trees, are non-trivial. And then there are these squares, which are basically the singlets when the representations become trivial. So in all these crosses, these t's are trivial. And in Volodya's talk, we saw that there was these t's in the boundary, which Volodya called phi's, which were also trivial, and they are basically this trace over this trivial representation, so it's just normalization. So, okay, the t's live in this fat hook, and when I say, and there is a nice picture, if I draw the fat hook, then it means that young tableaus must be drawn inside this fat hook. So this is the region where I should draw young tableaus. Young tableaus live here. So this is basically, let me maybe say something more about transformatrices. So how to compute in practice, so transformatrices in the fundamental representation, I gave you an explicit expression, how to compute them in higher representations. In
you don't have anything for SU2/2.
Here I'm thinking always in 2/2. So this is why this fat hook has size 2 here and size 2 here. If it was SUN/K, this would be N and there it would be K.
Does everything work for SU1/1? Because all of this whole thing you're talking about work for SU1/1?
Yeah, it works for any supergroup.
And is life simpler for
SU1? And any supergroup. It will just be thinner.
SU1/1 is now you have tableau, actually.
Yeah.
So you just have fermionic elements, right?
There is only one representation which is non-trivial.
Yes. You ask about representation theory or about the beta results?
So two different. Suppose you want to do ADS 2 times S2 instead of ADS 5 times S5. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So that's naively everything goes the same, it's just you replace SU2 to
you'd have to
SU1/2, you have a central extension. Has this all been worked out, or does it all work?
It is not, I don't, it is,
it
there
is,
so I mean ADS2, for the ADS2 duality, right?
Forget about the ADS2 side, I don't know what that is. There's no analog of Supriang Mills, but just on this side.
CFT2, you mean?
No, first of all, yes, no central extension, but...
No.
You can't have a central extension of SU1/1?
Yeah.
The central... The S1/1, the central element is already the central extension.
Yeah, no. But the prediction would be that there are many relativistic supersymmetric sigma models which also have this kind of description. And the group theory dictates the solutions of Hirota in such half-fat hooks. Mm-hmm. But probably there will be no other solution with all these strange x plus minus, etc. Which
but does all this Luscher stuff work?
Yes. So Luscher, as I said, it's completely generic and it works for anything. It doesn't even need to be integrable or two-dimensional. Luscher is quite general. Of course, yeah. Luscher here, it's very nice because we combine it with Bitanzat. So we go very far with Bitanzat and then we have Luscher just to find the correction. If
there is no extension, what buys it?
No, but for example, in this was for ADS 5 times S5, where you have the CFT4, but for example, for these more recent dualities of ABJM, there you also have a 2/2. No, but I think 2/2 is special in the sense that extensions are...
I see, so 1/1, you can't do the central extension.
I'm not sure, I think...
1/1 is in some respects similar to 2/2.
That's what I would have thought.
Okay, maybe.
In some sense, it's too small to... to really use some formalism on it. I mean, it has probably less structure because you don't have the SU2s. As a physicist, you're supposed to think of SU2s. I think it's not for you as a physicist. So this has lots of SU2s, but like.
I mean, just to check all these crossing things and things that people are talking about, it seems that it's simple as it is.
Let me. So, to finish this discussion on these transformatrices, let me. It will be useful for what comes, because now I will speak about how the Y system reproduces all this, how it fits into this construction. But so let me call this object here, which appears here very naturally in Luscher, and it also appears in Beta equations. Let me call it y(a,0). And let me put it here an infinity, because it will be the large volume limit of our Y system. So how to compute wrapping? Let me just be completely explicit about how one could compute wrapping for any operator, say for Konishi operator. So what do we need to do? And so the recipe for computing wrapping. So the first thing one should do is I have to, so I am at weak coupling, But this is, of course, here I can put. I'm considering the leading wrapping interaction at weak coupling. So first I identify the state. Say, for example, for Konishi, I say that I want to put only K4 equal to. And then I compute, then I need to compute this sum and this integral here. Now, it turns out that this factor here, this dispersion here, is of order g to the 2l already, this propagation here. So everything else, I don't need to solve bit equations up to the order g to the 8, which is the order trapping. I only need to solve them to order g to the 0. So identify state and solve asymptotic bit equations for uj at leading order, order g to the 0. Then I need to compute t's, the ta, plug them into this expression, and sum over a and integrate. So how to compute ta? So I just need to compute ta, and this is completely compute ta. And again, there is a formula, like there is for characters, a generating function for the characters in anti-symmetric representations. Let me recall that for characters. Can you really read if I write here? No. I might write here. So in the same way as for characters, you have that the determinant of 1 over 1 minus g times z, maybe to the power minus 1, I don't remember, sum over a minus 1 to the a, character in representation a times z to the a, there is a generating function. Here we also have a generating function which will generate the sum over a of minus 1 to the a, ta, a view, and the analog of a will be a shift operator, e to the minus I a du, so it's an operator, it acts on a function, and by reading the shifts I read the ta's, and this operator w is given by this expression. It's a simple product of four terms, all of them have these shifts operators here, and I should expand, there is some powers minus one, so it's an infinite expansion, and these tau 1, tau 2, tau 3, and tau 4, they are the building blocks of the fundamental one. So in this sense, it's really being built from the blocks which build t fundamental. So from this expansion of omega, I read t, I plug here the leading order, and I can compute. So in this way, we reproduce, and this comes out from Y-system, so Y-system reproduces the leading Lusher corrections, and we did it for all twist two operators, for Konishi, and we even made a prediction for ADS, for CFT3. So let me then speak now about the Y-system. So what is the Y system and what is the connection to what I spoke up to now? So now the Y system is a set of functional equations like E dot R, but instead of being for the variable T, they are defined for they are equations for the variables S. They also have two indices, A and S, and they are again of there is a shift by plus and minus. You divide by a shift in the variable A, so it's like if you take the log, it's like a discrete Lambert or a discrete Laplacian. And this is equal to 1 plus y a s plus 1, that is to the neighbor which is to the right of the y, 1 plus y a s minus 1, the neighbor which is to the left, over the neighbors which are below, so y a plus 1 comma s, 1 plus y a minus 1 comma s. And these y's, they live, instead of living in this fat hook like the t's live, they live into this t-shaped region. And when s equals 0, I painted them black because I will now explain that they are slightly more important than the other ones. So now these y's, they live in this region, but y's are finite in these balls, which were the points where t were non-trivial, and in the crosses, the y's are equal to infinity or zero. They are just trivial in the crosses. So they are non-trivial in this, in the regions where I draw a ball. Now, what is the connection then between this y system and what I spoke before? So first connection is that y system is related to Irota. It basically is the gauge invariant version of Irota. If I define, if this y's, which I propose here, if this yas, I write it as t, Okay, sorry. Before telling the connection between what we spoke before, this is nothing. I mean, I wrote these equations. I didn't tell you how to compute the energy, how to compute nothing. This is completely empty. You could have complained. So, first of all, the black nodes, as I told, are important. So, why A0? It behaves when U goes to infinity as this X, the dispersion relation appears here. X, the momenta. This is the momenta of the fused guy to the power L. This is boundary conditions to this Y system. And then the energy, or the anomalous dimension, it's delta minus J, this quantity, is given by the sum of epsilon of uj, sum over j, the number of magnets, 1 up to m, plus some integral dA du. So it's very similar to the Lucher formula which I wrote, dA of u log of 1 plus y a comma 0. So the energy only depends on this y a's, and there is a sum over a. And finally, these uj's, which don't appear here, they are the points where y 1 comma 0 of uj is equal to minus 1. So this plays the role of exact, not asymptotic, but exact Bethe-Ansatz equation. And this is the expression for the energy, which is given by the sum of individual particles plus a term which is not of the form of a sum of individual particles, but rather depends on the vacuum polarization and mixes everything.
Well, as you know, it's E minus J.
So I didn't say what is E. So this is delta minus J. Okay.
Also, you have to precise that it's in the mirror. The integral is calculated in around the cylinder. Yes.
Okay. Why did you point out? So, there is physical and mirror kinematics for this X plus and X minus, and it's possible to define, but I think it's a bit confusing at this point. It's an integral, and in the same way as in relativistic theories, you can have sin shift theta and then shift theta by theta plus I over 2, and you go to physical to mirror. These kind of manipulations have an analog here.
And the schizophrenia continues, because now suddenly you also write the thing to the L, and L doesn't mean anything in string theory.
So the way we must think is, you give me an operator and it has some L, and then I compute the anomalous dimension from this equation.
Now you're actually using this. You are using weakly coupled gauge theory intuition.
If you want that extreme strong coupling, I can also define.
Absolutely no way to say that L has to be 2, 3, or 4, right?
No.
It would be 2.4 for you.
Yeah. And there is no way to guess only from symmetry why this dispersion will come. So the logic we have in mind, I didn't say how to derive the Y system, but all these questions, the only way at this point we have to address them are to come to the derivation and say that it came from putting the theory at temperature J. By definition, J was the integer. So only by the derivation. I mean, the formulas will probably, at this point, I don't see that they protest when you put J not to be integer.
A is supposed to be half integer, or?
What, A?
L.
L is integer. L is supposed to be integer. From the formulas, you don't see what problem you run into if you put L not
positive
integer.
Integer larger or equal than 2.
Yeah. The positive integer larger or equal than 2.
In your formalism, L is not integer.
We don't see anything going wrong, except for the fact that these functions, as I said, they are the Joukowsky map, so they are defined by some square roots. So if you put L equal 2.3 here, you get extra singularities. You get the usual square roots, and you get extra singularities. So the only argument at this point is to say, okay, since I don't want extra singularities, let L be integer. There is nothing stronger than this, except for the derivation. How is this all this derived? Like I will mention at the very end. Just the idea is to take the mirror channel where, by definition, the L was the L which you started, which was the integer, and then do the computation in the mirror. So from the very beginning, you started with some quantized length from when you derived this. But there are points to be understood. Why L is the integer? Whether this dispersion only fits to slash 2 or if it would fit something more general, etc. There are, of course, many questions to be understood. So,
L is half integer because fermion gives 3 halves, right?
No.
L is engineering.
J can be integer or half integer, but L is always
L is always integer. L is the length, it's not the R charge. R charge is J. Okay, so let me explain. So this is the proposal of the Y system. It's also a functional equation which uses a lattice, as I said, a bigger lattice. And now what is the connection between this Y system and Dirota? So Y system is related to Dirota in the sense that if I parameterize my Ys in terms of these variables t's in the form ta s plus 1 ta s minus 1 over ta plus 1 s ta minus 1 s, then indeed if t's obey Dirota, they will imply that y's obey y system. So if I can find t's which solve, where is Dirota equation, which solve this equation, I immediately in the plane, it's just in this plane, I immediately obtain a solution to the Y system. So the T's are like a rewriting of Dirota. And the analogy is that this Dirota, these T's, they are like the gauge potential, and these Y's, they are like the F mu nu. These T's, there is a huge gauge symmetry in Dirota, because as you see in Dirota, I shift the argument by I over 2, but then I can shift S by 1 and A by 1. So for example, if I multiply T AS, if it goes to some arbitrary function of U plus I A over 2 plus I S over 2 times T, I still get another solution of Dirota. And I could also have a function with minus I over 2 and minus S over 2. So there is a huge gauge symmetry in T. And these Ys are gauge invariant under this gauge symmetry. So if you pick this Y, they are gauge invariant. So these T's are a set of equations which are huge gauge symmetry, and Ys are invariant. And indeed, if you go to T's, for example, on this region here, say this region here, R, for example, what happens to T's? T's, you have this A plus 1, which is equal to 0 in R, and therefore you get just these equations in the boundary of the physical strip. But what is this equation? This equation is just discrete Laplace in S. S plus 1, S minus 1. So for example, in that boundary R, TAS is just a function of U plus IS over 2 times of another function of U minus IS over 2. These were the functions that Volodya had in the boundary of his T system. He had some phis which only depended on the left moving or the right moving waves. So it's really analogous to F mu nu. You are at infinity and the region of our boundary. F mu nu is strictly zero. T mu nu can be a pure gauge, which is precisely what this is. So the Ys are zero or infinity. They are trivial, and the T's take some trivial values. So Now, let's recover what we found before. So let's take the large L limit of this Y system, L going to infinity. So now I consider large operators, and I'm considering the leading corrections. So because of this term here, because of this dependence here, what happens is that the YA0, the black nodes, they go to zero. And since they go to zero, since these black nodes, all these black nodes here go to zero in the middle, when you consider the equations for the neighbors, when you consider the equations of the neighbors, they will interact with the y's here, and with the y's here, these two will be zero, and basically will decouple. The y's will decouple. The two wings will decouple because here they are very small. So in this limit, what happened is that this fat hook decouples into 2/2, so it was glued and it slightly opened like this. So it decouples into two fat hooks. And then these T's are completely decoupled. Now these T's here live precisely in this strip, which I said was the strip where the transfer matrices of 2/2 in several representations lived. So now, in each of these wings, now I will get here the transfer matrices which we saw before for the right, and here the transfer matrices which I saw before for the left, SU2/2. So this decoupling, I'm recovering here that Ys, they are related to T's, and these T's, which will appear here are the t's of 2/2. And now I can consider the equation for these nodes here, which will couple now with the 2/2. And what do I get if I put s equals 0 in this equation? I get Laplace equation of y when s is equal to 0, this discrete Laplace. So I get ya0 plus ya0 minus over ya plus 1, 0, ya minus 1, 0 is equal. The denominator I can drop because it contains y0, which is small, and I get 1 plus ya1 times 1 plus ya minus 1. And this ya1 is already in these points here where I just solve them in terms of t's. And if I write this one, for example, can be seen to be t antisymmetric plus times t antisymmetric minus over t antisymmetric plus 1 times t antisymmetric minus 1. This factor and this factor, this is for the left guy, and this factor here for the right guy. And comparing this with this, I see that the y's, they are proportional to the t's. The four y's that appear here are the four t's which appear here. Times a zero mode, because this guy here, there could have a zero mode in terms of y and time. So what I get is that ya0 is t left a, t right a, times some zero mode. The zero mode is an arbitrary function of u minus a over 2, of u plus a over 2, over the same function of u minus I over 2, some solution of Laplace equation, and in particular, a particular function which I will single out from this term is x minus a over x plus a to the L, and I single out this term because this particular term I need to satisfy the boundary conditions. Y1 equals 0 equals minus 1 should give asymptotic bit equations, and this fixes this zero mode phi. Once the zero mode is fixed, I can compute now all otherwise, and in particular check Lusher. Plug them into there and check Lusher. So this, I explained how Y system recovers, and now let me just conclude saying what should we now do with this Y system. So I explained this Y system, it's related to these T systems. There is this gauge invariance, and in particular it reproduces the large L results, both the bit equations, because the transformators appear here, so I immediately get all the bit equations, the auxiliary one, the physical ones, and also the Lusher formulas, because as I explained, the transformators are precisely the objects which appear in the Lusher formulas. Okay, so the situation is the following. So we have the Y system, and in particular we understood well the large L limit of this Y system. And now there are two nice things to do. On the one hand, explain a bit better, trying to understand these issues with quantized L and this branch cut. And by understanding better this origin of the Y system, I mean that we should derive it in the same way that we derived the Y system for SO4. That is, we have this physical theory here on a given size L, and what we do is we start from the meager theory in size R, which is not the same as the physical theory, but as I explained, it is some other theory that is not important for us. We start with this theory, we put it in some temperature. This is why I say that you see the integer L, it appears much before the noise system. It appears immediately when we start. We start to say, okay, I have here my R and my L is 3. And then I start the derivation. So the question of integer L maybe should be answered at this point rather than at the very end. And then we start from this theory. We write here what is the free energy, and we read off the ground state energy. And then by this analytical continuation tricks, we expect to get also the excited states. And indeed, you see that if you pick poles in this log, you get precisely this excitation. So these excitations can be understood coming from this integral, from picking extra singularities, like extra poles that you pick. And then another interesting direction is to continue what we did in the O4. So in the O4, what we did, we started here, we went to Y system, and then we made a nice plot of the spectrum as function of L. Here it would be a plot as function of G. So how would we do this? We would need to exploit this gauge invariance. Here, this was very important in the O4 model, and here it played very little role. And we should exploit it to write a single, this is what we managed to do in the SO4, a single integral equation, which is equivalent to the Y system, but much easier to solve. Because a priori, a single integral equation, like DDV. similar to DDV equation known in integrable models. What do we do when once we have these integral equations? We iterate this solution. This integral equation, this has the great advantage over the functional one, which is easy to iterate. You start with a large L solution, you smoothly deform to a small L. Whereas in the functional form, so far we could not find a neat way of iterating. There is some things we can do, but to iterate it's, the Y system, it's still not in a good shape. So we should exploit this invariance, try to write a single integral equation which would allow us to iterate, and therefore starting from this large L solution, deform to smaller Ls to find the exact solution. In the O4, we understood that this deformation is unique, and that by parameterizing these large L solutions, we could then write an integral equation and completely plot all the states as function of lambda. So of course, our goal now is to try to have a plot of Konishi operator at all lambda, or of the twist M operators, and check BFKL, or check some of the predictions that people know. Okay, thank you.
The last integral equation you mentioned that you are iterating in. Do you know anything about the properties of this series of iterations, whether it will converge, be asymptotic?
So it is. So these Ys, once we integrate them, they have this L here. They are exponentially suppressed in L. So this is the parameter which you control. So in the O4, you have an expansion in e to the minus L cos theta. So as Volodi said, it's highly convergent because it's exponential of exponential. Now, we had a plot of all these states running from L equal 1 until L was equal to 0.1, where we could already see the free theory, you know, in the free asymptotic theory, etc. But for example, to go for 0.001, it already did not converge, this iteration method. We have to go to something more sophisticated. But certainly, to start deforming, it's good. The parameter is the exponential suppression in L.
To the asymptotic beta hunters is basically that you turn two fat hooks into a fat T.
Yeah.
And then this is the formula you change. And these are the only two steps in some sense?
I mean, this is oversimplified because... But, but you said in some sense, right? So I can answer yes. I mean, the steps...
Explain in what sense it's oversimplified.
Your picture.
So, for example... no, but you are completely... Yeah, you are right. It's not really oversimplified. So when L is strictly infinite, they really decouple. Otherwise, they start coupling again. So... I mean, the two wings always couple, but indirectly, right? Because you put the spin waves in left and right, and of course they interact because you solve bit equation, and it depends on whether you excite.
So
but they start in...
They couple, but only three equations...
Exactly, exactly. And now they start coupling more intensively, yeah. Exactly.
And also, okay, I said it, but you didn't mention today that the crossing works.
Yeah, so... If you impose now that this Ys, so there is a crossing symmetry when you flip this x plus to 1 over x plus. You recall that there is this Zhukovsky map, so x plus appears always with 1 over x plus. But if we do it, x plus over 1 goes to 1 over x plus following the map, you see that it changes energy to minus energy, so it is some crossing symmetry. And you can check that these Ys are invariant when you change x to 1 over x. So there is a factor which comes here from this.
That was there before. Property of the transformations.
The transformations, they are not invariant. They transform with some factor. They are covariant.
They chop out some factor.
They chop out some factor, and this factor is precisely the factor which is absorbed by the scalar factor.
Yeah, but so that's there before.
Yeah, you had something in your Matlin paper, right? Yeah, about this, yeah. Mm-hmm, I agree, yeah. This factor which comes out was known, yeah.
Is it a strong coupling inside here, something?
So what I explained here, there is of course a double expansion. On the one hand we have coupling, on the one hand we have L. And what I presented here for the large L solution of the Y system, which was given by product of S matrices times dispersion relation, I am considering large L, but any coupling. because this S matrix is believed to be known to any coupling. So here, what I'm speaking about is really for any coupling, but L large.
So, but you said you reproduce some weak coupling stuff, right?
Because the weak coupling is the most interesting one, because since this is a world sheet, since everything is based on the world sheet, it's nice and it can be done. We can reproduce the finite size corrections to the giant magnums, which are classical string solutions. This one can do. But what's really remarkable is to be able to push this duality and go exactly to the very weakly coupled gauge theory, which is strongly coupled string theory, and still get the wrapping corrections coming from perturbative computations of Young-Mills. So this is why I mentioned them rather than the other ones, because they are more surprising, right? Because here everything, all these loops are two-dimensional, and suddenly you reproduce the wrapping, which in components are like 130,000 diagrams. Four-dimensional one, so.
No, but it's like you say it's like a worksheet, but it's not a string worksheet.
This is
like
a string worksheet. It is a string worksheet.
Really
it's a light con-gauge string worksheet.
So do you get the first correction from coupling to the conition?
Yeah, to the giant magnon, which is the
giant magnon. Okay, so that's magnon. Like very light.
So you can put two magnons, and it would be the analog of Konishi. Yeah.
When you say light con-gauge string worksheet, what exactly do you mean?
I mean that I light con-gauge, and I have a two-dimensional theory, and this is my starting point. And
but you don't mean light con-gauge Schwarz, or do you?
If you want to understand how to deal with this road sheet properly, that the structure should come out.
Yeah, but it's light con-gauge Schwarz, right? It's light con-gauge Schwarz.
You say it's light con-gauge Schwarz. You mean that picture is light con-gauge Schwarz, or it came from light con-gauge Schwarz, or it should be light con-gauge Schwarz?
This theory is equivalent. It holds for any theory where I have a circle and it's periodic in that direction. Yeah. Now, in light con-gauge Schwarz, I also have a circle. The size of the circle is the angular momenta of the state, and so this picture I can say it's green Schwarz if this circle is J. But I mean, it's a periodic theory. No? Didn't I answer? I mean, you start with light. You start with the usual side-side connection. You quantize.
You can try to quantize. You can quantize around the background.
Yes.
Like
yes. So here we are not setting J to be large.
And I don't know how to do light con-gauge Schwarz in ADS. I know in flat.
Yeah, so as I said, the idea.
You don't need to do it actually.
You don't need to do it at small j.
He doesn't have to mention it.
You don't need to do it. You don't need to do it at small j. You only need to do it at.
Is he pretending or is he?
You need only to do it at large.
You can do it if you're a masochistic.
You only need to do it at some large j because we have this picture.
But your picture is supposed to be valid for all j.
Then the J comes as a temperature in this channel. But you have a theory where you have a huge circle, which is like you can think of, it's not exactly light con-gauge because it's a meager theory to light con-gauge. But apart from that, okay, you can think as if it was light con-gauge string theory. The circle is huge, so you have this notion of S matrix and excitations which move. And then you put this theory at finite temperature, and the temperature will be J. And to put a theory which we know how to solve exactly in finite temperature is doable. You just compute the energy, the entropy, and you compute the free energy. So it's there, the finite J, it's not an obstacle, it's just some temperature. The temperature you don't care. What you care is about this size being big indeed, because otherwise you don't know how to quantize.
So I guess the question is, what is this mirror theory that you talk about?
Exactly. So and this,
like
yeah, so I should cite, so this was done by Gleb Arutunov and Sergei Frolov, who studied this mirror theory, trying to understand what's the dispersion relation, weak rotating from one to the other. But since the dispersion relation is of this square root type, where you have epsilon square is equal to 1 minus 16 g squared sine squared of p over 2, the idea is that you can exchange space and time, and still you get something sensible. For example, you will get the energy in the mirror theory will be something like arc sinh of square root of 1 plus p squared over g. This could be terribly wrong, because I don't remember by heart. But okay, you have a different theory with a different dispersion relation. And
so what's the space-time description of this?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. If this corresponds to some, for example, no one knows if this two-dimensional theory corresponds to some gauge fixing of some string theory. So we start from string theory, we gauge fix, we go to mirror theory, We compute free energy, temperature J, and then we compute the spectrum of the original one.
If you do that in the other order, let's just say you took Green-Schwarz exchange and then gauge the extender, then you would get the same theory, right?
Again, a bit slower. So you start with Green-Schwarz.
Yeah, then you do the exchange, and then you gauge fixed. You will get the same theory, not the mirror, right?
I only gauge fixed once. I start with this theory.
Yeah, so
let me start with C being physical. Then I would obtain the spectrum of the mirror theory, which I don't know what it means. I mean, it means I compute the spectrum of the mirror theory. It also has some Hamiltonian, some spectrum. I'm computing it, but I don't know whether the mirror theory corresponds to some duality or has some interest at all. What I know is that the physical theory is interesting. It corresponds to n equals 4 and to ADS5 cross S5 strings. The mirror one, I don't know what it is. I just go there to start with because then the mirror is the one I want. Right? Because we start covariant, we light cone gauge, then we rotate, then we come back.
For the questions, let's thank the room for this.